Usher, 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 Usher.
Welcome to Broadway Baby, the podcast taking one casual theater goer to full out fangirl. I am your host, Kimberly Schmidt, here with my husband, Jay Schmidt.
Hi, guys.
And our baby, Alex Fasella.
Hi, everybody.
And this week, we listened to A Strange Loop. Yeah.
And this week, we listened to A Strange Loop.
And this week, we listened to A Strange Loop.
There, you wrote the intro for me.
Yeah, look at that.
It was a joint effort, yeah.
But first, Alex, has Baby met any world?
Baby's only met a little world, but it was interesting.
Yeah.
Baby on Instagram, unsolicited from someone who follows him, engaged him in the following conversation that I will now read to you. I will read it exactly as it is phonetically spelled as it was sent to me. I don't know this person. I get this message. Are you the one that did the Moana music? To which I said, am I Lin-Manuel Miranda? He writes back, I don't know, I'm tripping, but are you? And I wrote back, what would you do if I was Lin-Manuel Miranda? And he goes, I would be cool. I heard of you and my teacher talks about you a lot. I can't read my own writing. I said, yeah, I kind of look like him with the beard. And he said, yeah. And then the smiling but embarrassed bead of sweat emoji.
Where was this on?
Instagram Messenger.
Okay.
I had to convince someone that I didn't write Hamilton.
That's fun.
Moana specifically.
You do post a lot of Hamilton stuff.
I sure do. And now with the beard, I could win or at least place a lookalike contest.
Sure.
Yeah. It would need to be a goatee.
Yeah, that's why I had to get rid of the sides.
Did we do world?
Is there world to do me?
Nah, not really. No.
No, we really, really have not.
No, we haven't really been consuming a lot of media, really, either. I don't know if you figured it out, but we got a lot going on here at Shea Schmidt. We're really, really just...
Oh, dear, really here we are. Our word of the week...
Word of the week?
Word of the week?
As requested by our baby, is tech. To which I have a follow-up question.
Okay.
Are you referring to technical theater as a whole, or tech as it refers to tech rehearsals?
Tech rehearsal.
Cool. Because there's too much to get into. Many different unions.
Okay, yeah.
We're talking about technical
Didn't
theater.
Know about that other thing.
We are not qualified to talk about.
We can talk about IATSE, but I don't know. Tech, as in rehearsals, is usually about the week before a show opens, and they do what's known as 10 of 12s often, where you're working 10 hours out of a 12-hour day. So you'll tech from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. with 2 one-hour breaks, or many 20-minute breaks. But the idea is that you only work the 10 hours out of the 12, and you can have 3 of those, I think. In a week, union legally wise. And they're usually the first time that the actors are seeing the theater and the stage. And so they have a week to figure it out. And they'll do, so during those 10 of 12s, they'll do a lot of rehearsals, which are called cue to cue, which means they're going from light cue and or sound cue to the next one. So they'll
okay.
sort of go to one cue, set all of the lights, set that in the light board as that's what it is now. And then they would then move on to where the actors are standing and what the set looks like for the next lighting cue.
Okay.
And then they would create that light cue and move on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Those are
when
a lot
I was in the
of
booth,
like, stand
when I was in
the
booth. Yeah. When I was in the booth doing my plays, because it was so ramshackle, like one of us had to essentially do tech. And so I remember I did it once, and it was just going to be a blackout. It was really simple, but I was just like following along with the script and just like just silently sweating, worrying I would like fuck up the lighting cue. But
yeah,
you know, yeah. It was pretty much just an in one kind of spot. But I was like, oh, this could, because a bad cue will mess shit up.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's colloquially known in the business as oftentimes as Hell Week.
Correct.
Okay. Because it is not
fun.
You'll run certain numbers just to get the lighting cues right, like full out. But a lot of it is honestly, like, Tech Week is not about the actors really.
It's very rarely in costume.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if you probably heard us say that we say this a lot around the house, but more often than not, you have your stage manager in the audience somewhere. They usually have like a setup, like on a row of seats. They just like bring in these weird desk things that sit there. And more often than not, you'll be like, get like 2 seconds into something, and then you'll hear over the god mic of the theater, "Hold, please."
Yeah. Oh, that's how everyone, you got trapped in the air at Seussical.
Yes.
Hold, yeah. Please.
Hold, please.
And
yes.
Everyone has to freeze exactly where they are standing so that they can figure out what the lights look like.
Yeah.
It's like a game of freeze dance.
Kind of, yeah.
Except not hours. Fun and vaguely dehydrating.
Yeah, it's
sometimes they order you pizza.
Oh, that's cute.
It's a lot of hurry up and wait, and it's not necessarily, it's an exhausting day, but like death of by a million cuts kind of thing.
Yeah.
Or it's just like, okay, like, yeah, I've seen a lot of people lose their cool during tech. On both the tech side and from the actor's side, it is at least from my stint in professional theater, it is the hardest time to remain professional.
Okay.
Especially because you're holding for like 20 minutes, but you need to stay in the same spot, and so actors will just goof off.
Yeah, it's really hard. Yeah.
When like the lighting designer is really trying to figure out how to make your hair be in the light, like
when you say freeze, you mean just in your spot, or like if you're doing this for choreography and they go hold, you have to maintain that.
No, you can put your hands down. Yeah. No,
okay, so it's more of just a placement. Okay.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Sometimes they'll say like, "Jay, put your hand up," and you like put your hand up so they see where the light stops.
Yeah.
Okay.
Or if like. They need to come in and like put a spike mark down, which is a little piece of tape for like where you're putting a chair.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like if there's a quote unquote special, which is a lighting effect that is special. But say like you're putting a chair down, you sit in the chair and the light comes up and you're in a special, they're going to make sure that you always put that chair in the same spot. So yeah. They will put a little marker.
More often than not, if you look at a stage, I mean, they're harder to see like on Broadway and things like that, but if you really look at the stage floor of
many
a show,
different colors.
There are usually many different like little bits of tape that are all marked to where you're putting things.
Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you do a show where there's a lot of like let's say that, you know, there are some shows I've seen where they simulate that the stage is different places by putting like a textured kind of light effect on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
If let's say there's a lot of light on there, I'm sure they've got a trick around it, but like I would be worried like, oh, the light's going to illuminate all this weird looking tape, but maybe they get around that somehow.
No, tape is pretty matte, so it doesn't get picked up by too much light.
It's similar to gaff tape.
But there is also glow tape, which will often be put on stairs or anything that's sort of hazardous on stage, so that if mm-hmm. you're exiting in a blackout, you can see where you're going.
Okay.
One of my real fun duties once when I was teching a show was before the show, I always had to charge the glow tape. Because I don't know if you've ever been in a theater, there's no sun to make something glow in the dark.
Yeah.
So mm-hmm. you have to go around and put your flashlight on the glow tape for like a minute.
Yeah.
And so I did a show with a whole flight of stairs and I had to go and charge the tape.
That is Hell Week.
Yeah, I mean, it's the kind of thing where, I mean, if theater is like basically like a huge group of people putting together an airplane, like bit by bit, it's basically the week where like, okay, we're going to try and see if this flies. And sometimes it doesn't. And people lose, you know.
It's those, It's those sad pictures it's those sad pictures of like the 1920s airplane that has like the flapping wings and it just flies into a hay bale.
Yeah. But I've been a part of like tech processes where certain things that we had staged around and or certain effects that we thought were going to be like focal point of like a number or a scene, like just straight up weren't possible or didn't work. And so we had to just like, that's when you see people like really lose it, is when like, they're just like, things just like don't come together in a way. I was like, well, we have to go back to the drawing board and we really don't have time to do that.
An interesting factoid to tie tech into the current Broadway landscape.
Interesting factoid.
New segment.
Mean Girls just re-teched the show.
Okay.
Really?
Yeah.
Like this week?
No. They're closed.
Oh, that's what I thought. I was like, what? They're not.
That's what I thought too.
About a week or two before the shutdown, Mean Girls Broadway decided that they were going to revert some elements to reflect the tour. I guess they, I don't know if they rewrote stuff or just they restaged a lot of stuff when it went out on tour. And so they're implementing all of that on Broadway. And so they had to go into two full days of tech. Could you imagine relearning?
I mean, they're getting paid, but I mean, you know, it's still, that's a long, long day.
Yeah, and then they had to do the show at like 10.
Woof.
Yeah.
No thanks.
So tech is not fun. And then at the end of tech, you'll do like one or two dress rehearsals, and then which are full out. And then you do an open dress where you invite people, so maybe like half of the theater is full. Mm-hmm. You can see if people laugh or clap.
Yeah.
And then you're open for previews. And then a lot of times during previews, you are still in tech during the day.
Yeah.
Or just some kind of rehearsal during the day.
The preview process we talked about earlier is kind of like, is like diet tech.
Okay.
Because you're doing small change. Well, depends on the show.
Yeah, it depends on the show.
But technical-wise, you're probably not doing too much, unless you're Spider-Man.
Yes.
And that was, what, 200 previews worth of tech?
They did a whole year almost. Like, they did, like, man.
Yeah. I will say tech is a lot more fun when you're not an actor. I've been on, like, crew for things. It's more that you're busier.
You actually have stuff.
Like, I've been lighting crew for a few things, and, like, I could get up on a ladder and fix something or go stand somewhere and, like, cut a bunch of color gels. Like, there was always something to do, because before the actors come in, there's something called dry tech, where you're teching all of the cues, but there's no one there. And so when I was a lighting assistant, a lot of times it was just me standing in different parts of the stage with my hands at the height of whatever actor would be there.
Okay. Like, can we get you to really reach? We got Timothy Hughes in this one.
Yeah.
And I'd be like, too small with my hands.
Get me a stool.
And I've talked to you about this, but tech in particular it's always one of my pet peeves at comedy shows, is that you have so many comedians who do not know how to find their light.
Yep.
It drives me up a tree. I'm like, you
can feel when you're in the light.
And the tech process is where I learned that about that. And like how important that is, where it's just like, now granted, like, you know, 95% of my act working is facial expression, so I can't not have light because my jokes aren't good enough. But that's like a huge, you would think that like you just turn the lights on the stage on and you're hitting everything and like everything's lit up right. It's not, like, it really takes a lot of work.
Well, like, as we've mentioned, before, remember when we did that show, Jay, where I was like, I don't think I found the light because I just learned about that. And you went, it's okay. There was no light to find. There were lights on. Don't beat yourself up. It was a weird purple translucent mist looking thing we were performing from.
Oh, was that in Brooklyn? The Brooklyn show?
Yes. It was the one where Yeah. Oh. It was like up in the, and then we had nachos and talked about Endgame.
Yes.
Good day. Yes.
That was a good one.
I've seen many a comedy show where just someone gets up there and he plants himself in the wrong part of the stage.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And what's even more frustrating, and I've seen this so many times when people go up, they're in it, and then they step out of it because they don't like it. I guess they're not at that right point where it hits you, where it's not in your eyes, so they just step out of it. And I've seen a show where everyone did that. I'm like, no, why have a light then? It's like, yeah. No one wants to be in it. Like,
yeah, it's, well, also it's like, I understand. It's like, I can't see anybody. Yeah, that's the point. Yeah.
Yeah, you can't see anybody when you're in the light. But they can see you.
They can see
you. And that's who paid to see someone that day. Yeah. You didn't pay money to see the audience. They paid money to see you.
Yeah, I love when the light hits me just enough that all I see is kind of the black blob. I get really comfortable. If I can see people's faces, I'm like, uh-oh.
You're a real person with memories.
Yeah.
Yeah. You might get mad at me, but if it's a black blob, I'm like, all right. I can chill with the blob. We're good.
Yeah, much better.
Yeah.
Any other questions about tech?
Not really specifically, but I know, Kimberly, you said you've done tech. Jay, have you ever been on the tech side of tech, or just
in college a couple of times? I had to, but I don't really.
Yeah.
I was not necessarily great at tech things, so they.
Okay.
You know, I also had a tendency when I would work on a crew to at some point really injure myself.
Like, okay.
I burned my, what, I think you can almost still see the scar. Which finger was it? Oh, it's right here. You can still kind of see, you can see the little oval right there?
No.
If I really, you can still kind of see like a little oval. I burned my index fingers on an industrial glue gun so bad that like I had a blister like out to like that was like maybe 2 inches off my finger. Like it was huge. Oh.
Why did you touch the hot part of the glue gun?
I was gluing a thing together and it slipped. And then the thing that I was gluing was falling apart. And so I tried to like grab it and grab pieces. And then I put the accidentally sideswiped my finger. But then as I was doing that, I was still squeezing the glue. And then I just got glue all over it. So like I burned it and then got the hot glue. And then that burned even more to the point where Colin, like the shop, like the main shop professor who's seen everything, was like, "Goo! Like you gotta go! Oh my god!
It's gotta be drained."
The only it was bad. I had to have it land. It was awful. And I did that. I had a tendency to hurt myself, so they didn't really give me a lot of. That's why the next crew they put me on costume crew, because you can't really hurt yourself.
Needles.
Yeah, but I didn't. Yeah.
They didn't let you sell anything.
Yeah, they didn't even let me touch. They didn't let me do that.
That was
good for morale, you know. I'm funny, and I was just, you know, smiling, having a good time. Just made sure I was having a good time. You know. Yeah, I'm a morale officer. I'm not really like I'm not good at combat. You know.
You're the mess hall captain that sings when everybody's sad.
Yeah. Exactly.
You're the Jerry Lewis, not the Dean Martin of that Navy movie they did.
Yeah, but I remember like my tech experiences while being like while going into Hell Week, I was just as bored because I was like, "Do you need me to do anything?" They're like, "We're good." I'm like, "Okay." I was like, "I'm just doing this so I can get the credit so I can graduate," but I don't actually have any skills. So
yeah, we didn't have to do a career credit in college. The musical theater department didn't course load was too big. We didn't have time.
Yeah, we had to. All the performing arts students had to, and the
theater majors had to, but the musical theater majors
The tech teachers hated that was a thing that had to be a thing. They needed the help, but they were like, "These kids are worthless. Like they're just like they're showing up to crew in a dance belt. Like what are you doing?"
That sounds funny.
Yeah, sometimes you come from jazz. And you didn't have to.
God, I hope I tech it.
Yeah, I hope I tech it. Yep.
Yeah. But that's tech. It's a lot. I feel like it's one of those things that you don't quite understand the mindset of it unless you've been through it. Yeah, and that's when, like, really all of, like, the friendships really solidify.
I think so, yeah. That's, like, one of the good, nice parts about tech, the tech process, is that, like, it's a bottle episode.
You really get to know everyone.
Yeah, for better and probably much worse.
Yes.
And I think it really brings people together, because my favorite thing about, like, the tech process in general is that, you know, there's a lot of things in theater that, like, we are all really nostalgic about. And, like, you know, even the little things that kind of drive you crazy about theater, like, you end up, like, loving and missing. Especially in this time where, like, there is no theater, really. It's like, oh, I miss, like, the little things. Tech is, like, one thing that everyone's like, yeah, tech sucks. everyone bonds over the fact it's like, I wish I wasn't here right now. Like, I don't want to do this. No, neither do I. Yeah, but here we are.
Yeah.
Yep.
But if tech doesn't happen, your show sucks, so.
Yeah.
I've seen some bad tech, and it wasn't on anything, obviously, Broadway, but, like, on one of those plays I did, someone working the booth, I guess, wasn't paying attention when they told her about the cues and blacked out a scene in the middle, redid it, and they just continued the scene. It was... Oh, boy. Yeah.
That is always a tricky thing to do, because on a light board, there are, like, all of the numbers when you're like, let's program 17, and then you hit go, 71, hit go. Mm-hmm. But there is always, like, one big button that'll just black out the whole stage.
Yeah.
And you can accidentally hit that, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Usually, like, right next to the go button. Which is unfortunate. But also, it is very fortunate, because if something is, like, really going wrong, end.
Yes.
Go away.
Cut the mic on this whole thing.
Yeah. I think that's it for tech. Yeah?
Yeah, I think so. I mean,
unless you want to do 10 more hours and we can have a lunch break twice.
Yeah.
Can we get pizza?
No, not today. So we can get into the show. We listened to A Strange Loop this week. Did anyone have a history with this beforehand?
Nope.
When you guys were talking about it, I was reading the text and sitting across the room from Kimberly, and I went, what?
Yeah. So A Strange Loop happened last fall, and it was like, let me look at the exact dates. Oh, yeah, it was a summer show. So it was May 24th to July 28th last summer, and it had, like, all of this crazy buzz around it. It got extended a bunch of times. I could not for the life of me get it together to get a ticket by the time I realized it was going to be such a hit. And then I really hadn't listened to the cast album because everyone was like, it's so good, you have to see it. And I'm very much, I'll listen to the songs when I see it. But in this current world of when will I ever be in a theater again?
Thought
it might be a good idea to give it a listen. And I don't know why I had not ever known what it was about. But everyone was like, it's a strange loop. And I was just like, oh, it's probably about time travel or something. And, like, the artwork.
Time is a flat circle. It's the True Detective musical.
I was listening to it, and I was like, oh, no, it's just that he's writing a musical about a man writing a musical about a man writing a musical, and it's just title of show. But Larry Owens.
Yeah.
And so I had a great time listening through this show.
I am really bummed that I didn't even know this existed, because I would have really liked to have seen this.
It's so good.
It was getting a lot of Broadway buzz before all of this stopped everything in its tracks.
Yeah.
I will also mention that the drama desks were awarded last night.
Yeah, it won quite a few.
You know what they look like.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, the prom.
You know what they look like. very good pull, Alex.
Yeah. And they won Best Musical. Larry Owens won Best Actor. And Michael R. Jackson won Lyrics and Book.
And this also won a Pulitzer, I think?
It also won the Pulitzer this year. The Pulitzer
It's
for drama.
The first musical to ever win a Pulitzer without having a Broadway run.
Is that true?
Okay.
I guess that is true. Well, that'll get them to Broadway if nothing else does.
Yeah, it really, I'm bummed because I was literally got to the first song and I look at Kimberly and I go, is this Larry Owens? And she's like, yes. And I was like, oh, I really like him. He was in the majority of the runs of the Fat Camp musical that eventually turned into Gigantic. That was at the Vineyard.
Mm-hmm.
I was told I was not fat enough for. It's the nicest note I've ever gotten for not booking a show, because I went to that show a bunch of times and I really liked the creative team and I really liked the show. They're like, and literally Magic Oni is like, they love you. You're just not heavy enough. And I was like, well, that's the last time you're ever going to tell me that. I had no frame of reference for the show. I like Larry Owens and I loved the hell out of this show.
The only thing I really knew about it before, and I don't even know if he played any of this music, but at the first Broadway con that Broadwasted went to, our booth was right next to the stage in the marketplace. And 2 days in a row, Michael R. Jackson had like 15 minutes where he just played some of his songs, but it was so loud that I could not for the life of me decipher any of it.
Okay.
But I think he played the White Girl song. Because as it was happening, I was like, this sounds familiar. Maybe this is what he was playing when I was just like, speak up.
Do you guys want to hear my elevator pitch for the show?
Sure.
Evan Hansen, no privilege.
Okay.
Because it's all neurotic pop music, but dude is put upon by every part of the culture.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess musically it's similar.
Yeah, that's what I mean. More music, not so much plot line-wise.
He's not a bad person.
No, the way that he's a sweetheart.
Okay.
I just mean, like every song is kind of waving through a window, but about like really heavy stuff.
Yeah,
every song like is a bop, as the children say, but also very powerful.
Yes. Every lyric is, the rhyming scheme is really cool. All the melodies are great. I still have a little bit of a hard time figuring out exactly what the plot is, but that just means that's just a cast album thing. Like, there's really no complaints. It's a great album.
Yeah, the album is great. I hope that when Broadway returns, it arrives. Because I think we are ready for an entirely black cast written entirely by a black man.
Yeah.
About his experience.
Well, that's one thing. The interesting thing about this show for me is that this show, when you're saying, like, I don't really know what the plot is exactly, I'm like, I don't think there is much of one, really. I think there's some, like, light plot elements.
Yeah. But,
like, this show on paper, like, shouldn't work in that, like, oh, I'm writing a musical about writing a musical. Ah, cool, man. I was a sophomore in college once, too. Like, you know, like it's
hold, not, please.
Yeah, it just feels like it really shouldn't work, but it, like, really, really does.
Yeah, it's, like, on paper, like you're saying, I mean, the guy writing a musical about a guy writing a musical, then it's so very, very noticeably just an analog for him. To do that properly, every song's got to be perfect. And it is, like, it's one of those things where, like, if this was any poorer of a songwriter, you'd be like, I get it. It's just the story of how, because, like, they say, there's this trope that they always say, like, every author's first novel is the story of how they wrote their first novel.
Yeah.
And if it's a really great author, you notice it, but you think it's kind of neat. And if it's a bad author, you go, fuck you.
Yeah. It's the kind of thing where they're like, oh, well, all the other people are going to, like, play, like, aspects of his personality. And that, like, when I read that, like, synopsis on the Wikipedia, I was like, what am I getting myself into? I was like, okay, here we go. And then it's written so deftly that it totally, but also one thing I appreciate about listening through it, I was like, look, I am a straight white man. This show is 100% not for me. Like, this show was not, it's like, I can't really relate to a lot of the things. I don't understand a lot of the things, but it's written in such a way that I was like, oh, I feel like it's very digestible for someone that doesn't necessarily that's not equipped to appreciate like every nuance of it.
It puts you there.
Yeah.
Very quickly and very easily. Because so it's like you feel it.
Yeah, because it is so specific to, like you can say, like, yes, it is a musical that is taking a lot of the Black experience and putting it on stage, but more than that, you are following a very specific person through his very specific life, and that sometimes is easier to empathize with than, like, a, what is that word? Not trope. But like
archetype.
Yes. Like, it is way easier to empathize with a real person than an archetype being presented to you. And like, it does not get realer or more specific than this guy.
Yeah.
That's because it is just Michael R. Jackson writing about himself.
Yeah.
Pretty much. What was
even naming him Usher, because it's the same guy too.
Yeah, like it's the kind of show that the show feels so incredibly lived in a really refreshing way. But also, it was kind of listening through. I was like, okay, like we are in a time right now where we as white people just need to kind of shut our mouths and listen and learn and read and kind of just like our call to action is like, hey,
sit down.
you got to learn some stuff. And I feel like this is actually a good show to do that with.
Mm-hmm.
I was like,
absolutely.
I was like, this is teaching me in a really fun way.
That's how people were talking about it last summer, that it was like an important musical, and that's usually when I don't want to see something because I want things to be fun. But like, it's just a fun show.
And it's funny. Like, it's funny. The Harriet Tubman stuff, like,
oh my God. The him writing the gospel play and just it's one of my little loves, but I'll just say it a little bit, right? Like, his palpable distaste for Tyler Perry that you realize is the character, but also him in real life. Just having him write that show and be so angry would be like, if you said to me like, hey, can you write a Michael Bay script? And I'd be like, okay. Oh, explosions, boobs, yay, credits. Like, just the anger that you could feel. I love it so much. I laugh that whole track. I mean, I laugh the whole show. Every joke in it is great, but like, that's my favorite comedy part of it.
Oh yeah,
so specific, and it's so funny. Yeah,
because it's so very true.
Yep. I saw one Tyler Perry movie on a bus. Didn't see all of it because I fell asleep, but I don't think I enjoyed it very much. And that was one of his more like toned down movies, apparently. Although he is actually a pretty good actor. He was Colin Powell in Vice, and he was quite good.
Yeah.
Oh.
He's not a great career. I think he's a good performer. But also there's like the points that they bring up where it's just like, you may not like Tyler Perry, but like, what are you doing? Like, he's like at least making stuff. He's at least like doing a thing.
I wonder why, even after I've been kind of plugged into Broadway more, why this show is getting buzz, and I still hadn't heard about it until like you brought it up. Did it just not pierce my bubble, or
insidery buzz? I also got a lot of the buzz because it's the same director as Be More Chill, and so when Be More Chill was happening, and my friend was working on that show, they were all talking about Strange Loop because it was a lot of the same creative team.
Gotcha.
And so I like had an ear out for it because I knew it was happening. Also, a very random acquaintance of mine was the understudy for Larry Owens. So he would post his, and like my Instagram was just always full of people going to see Strange Loop. That's all I'll say it.
Yeah, I mean.
But like in the like theater, like contemporary musical theater circles, like it was the show of the summer.
Okay. What was your guys' favorite songs from it?
What are their names?
Yeah, that's the funny thing. It's like, I can tell you, like, what they're about.
Okay.
But, like, Exile in Gayville is so good. And, like, so true. I kept sending songs to Kevin from Broadway, so I was like, it's about you! Yeah.
Anything that involves the parents.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Like,
Tyler Perry writes real.
You know, if I'm being honest, the music of this is fine for me. I like the music okay. I think it's just the lyrics and the dialogue are so well done.
Yeah, I think the drama desk would agree with you because it did not win music, but it won lyrics.
I think music, like nothing, okay. Bops, yeah, but like nothing really like clicked with me exactly.
I mean, I obviously like inner white girl as a white girl.
Yeah.
With an inner white girl yourself, that's your strange loop. It's just a Russian nesting doll.
It's like, I have an inner white girl too.
Yeah.
And an outer one.
My inner white girl is like inner skinny white girl.
Yeah, my inner girl is a lesbian. I have an inner lesbian.
Mine is a Winona Ryder. I just know it. I can just feel it.
I love the last song, Interlude or Strange Loop is so good. My only complaint is that, and this is just like a complaint in general, is that the last sung line of the show is the title of the show. And here's the thing, it's written so evocatively and perfectly, but I was just like, Grease! Like, I was just like, it just felt a little weird to me. I was just like, you're going to end your show. Like, I want to go see that show and love the hell out of it because I want to see it. But also, I really hope when I see this show, like, after he sings that and the curtain goes down, there's like a lull and a quiet because I just want to be like, I want him to sing a strange loop. And I just want to go, okay. I get it now. All right.
I wonder if the title came before the lyric or the lyric came after the title.
I don't know.
Those were the same things I just said, but I wonder which came first.
I think I like the melodies more than maybe you guys did, because I thought the melodies were as strong. I love the lyrics, but I was really drawn in by the actual melody lines as the selling point for me. It's a tough call because they're both excellent, but I was like really hooked by the song craftsmanship as opposed to just the lyrics. But I mean, it's all of a piece.
It was like so contemporary musical theater, which maybe that's what I wasn't expecting it to be, so like contemporary pop musical theater that like I'm so used to those melodies having bad lyrics.
Okay.
But it was like, I was like, wait, but the lyrics are good? Was a nice surprise.
They're really good too.
Because you can hear a lot of those like jaunty little pop musical theater songs. And then like halfway through the song, you're like, this isn't about anything. And you're just words.
Spring Awakening? What?
Shh. That's on purpose. They're tone poems.
Anyway. I read, hang on. I've actually been saving this for a while. I read the guy who wrote the lyrics, his book explaining what he meant by all the lyrics. Mm-hmm. And remember you guys were like, oh, they're supposed to sound like children. That's why they're a little bit kind of clunky. Oh no, he thinks he's making them sound like geniuses. He's just not a good lyricist. I've now read his explanation.
Steven Sater.
Yeah, sorry. He's like, this is an allusion to this myth, and this is, I'm like, but it's not good. It's like, the show's great, but.
I still think that the lyrics are good. Anyway, that's disagreement and preference.
That's fine.
Anyway, I liked this show. Do we have little loves?
Yes.
I didn't really write any down because I just have all of the like little things stuck in my head.
One of my little loves specifically is when he's writing the gospel play. Mm-hmm. Or like writing the, not the gospel play, but he's writing the Tyler Perry script.
Yeah.
And the mom's like, oh, you just don't know how to pray the right way. Like part of me, my heart was like, I mean, that's a pretty good like jumping off point for like that kind of movie. Like I feel like as much as he's making fun of the process of writing one of these movies, I was like, I mean, it's like he kind of knows, like he's making fun of it, but like he knows how to, he could write this if he needed.
Yeah, he's a good enough writer that he feels like, my fucking talent is wasted, which is interesting because the rest of the show is all self-hating, but you can tell he has some kind of confidence where he's like, oh, I know how these work and I hate that I know and I have to do it, you know?
Yeah. But also you got to pay rent, man. I can only imagine what that paycheck looks like. Look, sometimes as a creative person, you got to do the Mission Impossible so you can do the Eyes Wide Shut. You know what I'm saying? Like,
well, that's that famous Kubrick film, Mission Impossible.
I don't know. Immediately went to Tom Cruise, but I'm just saying.
Like, okay.
You know, you gotta, you know, rob Peter to pay Paul a little bit. I guess it's not really like a little love, but like big love. I haven't rooted for a character in a musical, but like in. You root for Usher so much, even though there's not really like a lot, like a big thing to overcome in this, really. There is in like an esoteric, like in a like existential way, but like, you know, he's not trying to like, you know, defeat the leader of the bandits and save the town. You know what I mean? Like,
really, there's no boss in this.
It's just like, you really love this character. In a way, even though he doesn't love himself, you're just like, yeah, I get you. And it's from a show about a gay black man who I have, like, on paper, nothing in common with. It was just nice to see
a thing. You love musical theater.
Well, no, but you know what I'm saying? Like, it's, I was just like, oh, we're all the same at the end of the day.
Yeah.
That was just, like, really refreshing. Also, Harriet Tubman just coming out and being sassy is hysterical.
Yes. And James Baldwin, and like, oh, it's so good.
And making all the characters like, hi, I'm your self-loathing. I think that wasn't on the album, but I saw it on like one of the little videos.
Yeah.
Hi, I'm your self-loathing. I just had like a couple extra minutes. I just wanted to tell you that you're worthless. And I was just like, oh, yeah. That's the kind of thing where, again, it shouldn't work, but it's written so well that it's so funny.
And everyone's just like, that is when that happens.
Yeah. I got a few. First, I wanted to speak to something Jay said. Yes, there. I agree that there's no necessarily like, oh, you got to do the thing to do the thing, and then we get to go a strange loop curtain, you know. But I think the unspoken villain of this, I mean, it's kind of spoken, but I've read an interview with the creator. I think I might think this is a little darker than he means it. I think his parents are kind of emotionally abusive. He said he wanted to portray parents that love you, but they have a sticking point with you. I think the fact that the parents keep saying, I didn't want nothing, but by the way, you're burning in hell. Like, they can't wait to say it. I think they're really, really not right people, unless it's just heightened for musical theater. But it feels like all the stuff he's feeling about, I hate myself. You know, when you get to that number, AIDS is God's punishment, and his family goes, why do you hate us? Because abusers usually eventually accuse you of abusing them, their victim. That's just a trope of them. So it's like, yeah, he's got something to fight against. It's just not in terms of like a plot contrivance, but that just makes it even better. But like, I wonder if I'm reading too much into that, but the parents seem like they can't enter stage left without saying something shitty about him being gay. They just can't do it.
Yes, I will argue that they do not know that that's what they are doing.
Okay.
They are just trying to help their, like, I don't think they're coming at it as, like, they're trying to emotionally abuse their son. I think that's just how they want to say that.
Okay. Well, keep in mind that you can abuse someone without realizing it, but I get where you're coming.
Yeah, I just mean that, like, when they, just to your point of, like, them accusing him of hating them, like, it's because they don't know what they're doing.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, but also there's some sweet...
I mean, but they are mean.
But again...
They are mean.
Yeah.
There's some really sweet moments that the parents have. But also in throughout the course of the show, they specifically are like, I don't like that you wrote this song about me. Like, this isn't how I feel about this thing. Like, there's like some little small... like meta stuff where it's like they're talking about that they're in the song that they don't like that he wrote about them, and they're saying, I don't like you're making me look like the bad guy. So I think there's some self-awareness to it.
Okay. Yeah.
But I mean, you know, it's.
But yeah, they're definitely the like the thing he has to overcome.
Yeah.
yeah. is if you're being told that your whole life, you're going to agree with it to some point.
Yeah. So my loves are, my first love is Tyler Perry Writes Real Life. Because as I said, because it's a great song. I think it's my favorite song in the whole thing, but also just this writer's palpable hatred for Tyler Perry is so funny to me. Exile in Gayville is really great. It kind of sounds almost like new wavy. Like it's kind of like 70s pop meets Elvis Costello kind of a vibe. And I'm really, and plus the lyric, your white gay male Dan Savagery is just so good. I got one more, and it's the I didn't want nothing reprise, because, and this speaks to kind of what I was saying, but like the first one's like, I didn't want nothing, and then they bring up the gay thing. But the second one, the music's really ominous, and you're like, oh, he definitely doesn't want nothing this time. What's going to happen? And then it leads into it being a huge issue. I love the show, guys. It's very good.
So good.
Yeah.
I liked it a lot.
Yeah, me too. My back is killing me.
I'm sorry. Yeah, my little, did I say a little long? Yeah. I liked all of it. Okay. I very much enjoyed Exile in Gayville. And then I found myself singing along to Inwood Daddy. And then I was like, these aren't words I should sing in the shower with my parents home.
No.
No, they are not.
Yeah. Another thing about the lyrics I like is it really doesn't shy away from just the, not for lack of a better term, like the naughty words, and like it says butthole and dick and whatever, but it doesn't ever feel like it's juvenile. It feels just like, yep, I mean, it is funny, but also feels like, yeah, that's the proper way to end this joke. It doesn't feel easy.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Very smart show.
Yeah. Just very frank.
Yeah. I enjoyed it very much. I encourage everyone to listen.
Please do.
Let's see. Well, what does Harold do if he's sitting at Playwrights Horizons watching this show?
I want him to leave, but also he's very confused. I just want to get into his mindset briefly before I say, tell him to leave.
Yeah. Part of me is like, I think I'll take his phone and turn it off and be like, you stay and watch this.
Yeah, it isn't. I mean, it's an important show, as we said.
Yeah.
Yeah. You stay.
You stay. He's won a Pulitzer.
A Pulitzer.
Yeah.
Come on.
You hand your phone to your granddaughter.
Michael R. Jackson's like first big show that got produced, and it's the one he's been working on like his whole life, like since he has started writing musicals. Like, I don't know. I guess it has happened to everyone that's ever won a Pulitzer, but like, isn't that insane that you're just like, oh, I'm a struggling writer, and then like a year later, you're like Pulitzer Prize-winning author.
Yeah,
it's fun.
Interesting to me. That's like,
it was insane.
Yeah, it's fun, and also reminds me of a thing that I've been noticing of like sometimes a show gets so big or is so good that it gets so much money, whatever, that it kind of affects its own ending. Like this, like he's a struggling writer until he's not, because now we know. Or like Hamilton, the whole message is. And then he basically was resigned to obscurity, but not anymore. So it kind of like changes the ending almost.
Hmm. Yeah. There's also when Title of Show went to Broadway, because that was also a show about writing a show. It was very meta. And so when it went to Broadway, they had to write a whole new section about getting the show to Broadway. And they're talking about the budget. And they're like, what are we going to do with a Broadway budget? We're just four chairs and a keyboard. That's like all of the lyrics to all the songs. Is that just four chairs and a keyboard? And they just go, huh. And then just at the very end of the show, just bedazzled four chairs and the bedazzled keyboard comes down. And they're like, that's what we did with it.
That's so good.
And it was like the best joke.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah.
I don't know any of Title of Show.
Ooh, we could do Title of Show. It's so good. It's actually similar in its meta-ness, but more of just a silly fun show.
Okay. I do have a friend who wants to come on and do it with us, so.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
It's great.
Yep.
Is it time for Louise?
First, we got a review, and then
it is very review.
I sure do. a Louvre Louvre. Yes. Review comes grooves, and the title is The Fellow Castaway. 5 stars. Everybody rate Broadway Baby in your app. 5 stars, please. It really helps our numbers. Totally really where Alex is coming after this heartfelt and serious podcast. I'm a fanboy myself now. Thank you.
And, yay.
And now, sing out, Louise. Yeah. I'm just a Broadway baby trying to be an ally, but I can't help but worry. Am I doing enough here? I'm signing some petitions and I am making calls, but am I really helping? I am fighting that fear today. A protest on a weekend in which I stare down cops. I march with those who need me, helping the movement make it. At night, the street's on fire. The cops are making moves. Now here's a curfew and I'm too afraid to break it. Today, I hope I help the world to be better. Hey, Alex, it's your inner Alexander Hamilton. Oh, shit. Hey, man, I just wanted to tell you I'm really proud that you're signing all these petitions and that you're giving money to charities and really trying to amplify voices that haven't been heard. That's really great. Thanks, inner Hamilton. But I have a question. Have you been starting any Facebook fights about it? No? Oh, wrong, buddy. Because you see, I would be starting Facebook fights about these causes on the reg. Yeah, that is what you would do, Hamilton. Yep, it's a good thing I died before Twitter. Anyway, I wanted to let you know you're not helping enough. Oh. Hey, Alex, it's your inner Evan Hansen. Hey. I just wanted to know, let you know, I know it's really, you know, you're always really honest about your struggles with depression and mental health, but I just needed to go ahead and feel really bad about that because, like, you know, you're really privileged. You're a straight, white, cisgendered man, and you're still sad. That's not waving through a window. That's owning the window and complaining it has a smudge. Oh, okay. How could this get worse? Hey, Alex, it's your inner Maureen from Rent. Oh, no. I just want to encourage all the theater characters in your head to join me in booing you right now. Come on, everybody. Come on, Hamilton. Come on, Evan Hansen. Come on, the non-equity cast of Godspell. Boo with me. Oh, why are all the theater characters in my head so mean to me? I'm just a Broadway baby trying to be an ally. I'm learning my Black history. They don't teach you in high school. I'm reading Ta-Nehisi Coates and some James Baldwin. But I will worry, am I doing it just to be cool? So days like this just get me. I hate days like today. I see my white skin and a system that's abusive. Someone whose heart is breaking with the news every day. Someone who thinks if he can't fix it, then he's useless today.
That might be my favorite one so far. That was really good.
That was very good.
I was worried it was going to be like, I was like, oh, well, welcome to the era of Ernest Outro. I wake up every morning.
I tell myself to try. I say no compromises. I claim to have a plan, but feel like nothing more than an angsty gay black man who looks into the mirror despite the grief it brings, who hears these sloppy S's betray him as he sings. Sometimes I feel so ugly, sometimes I feel so smart. Some people stand together. Meanwhile, I stand apart. Should I give up on hoping? My point of view will shift and let this agony just be my greatest gift. But if that is the secret, that makes like zero sense. I'll never change forever. I stay on the fence. With doubts I let define me, and lust I can't express, and pain I keep avoiding, and rage that I repress. I should stop overthinking and do the thing that's tough. Unleash my hungry lion, 'cause north
Kathy's had enough of toxic Tyler Perry and white gay male tyranny and my secret inner white girl, though she is dear to me. But would that be sufficient? Or would that be a sham? 'Cause even with those actions, I'm stuck with who I am. Someone whose self-perception is based upon a lie. Someone whose only problem is with the pronoun I. Maybe I don't need changing. Maybe I should regroup. 'Cause change is just an illusion. And I is just an illusion. If thoughts are just an illusion. Then what a strange.